Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360. What's going on, listeners? Welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. Hope you're doing well. We're going to be chatting all things radiology and really something pretty cool that you may or may not have heard of called Vital Rad. So really cool stuff. And I love where the profession is going with the advancements. And joining us is the one and only Dr. Christopher Brand. How are you, my friend?
Good. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, welcome to the show, because it's always a blast when I have you on. So to the listeners, Dr. Chris Brand is a staff veterinary radiologist with Vital Rads, veterinary imaging specialist in Cypress, Texas. He completed his DVM at St. Matthew's University in the Cayman Islands and clinical rotations at the University of Georgia. After a short time in general practice, Dr. Brand was accepted into the Vital Rads residency program, which he completed in 2020, and he was born and raised in Canada. Hey, I have a dachshund, Dr. Brand. Clark W. Griswold is from Ontario, just an FYI. So good animals, good people, and our friends in Canada.
Well, and I love the movies he's put out there, so that's great.
Oh, excellent. I love it. So good. So, you know, talk to me a little bit about the field of radiology. What got you interested? Because we have a lot of great veterinary students that tune in and listen to the show. So what piqued your interest?
For me, radiology has always been sort of that field where, you know, you get a picture, you get a puzzle, and being able to sort of unlock pieces of that puzzle and put together a diagnostic sort of plan is always been sort of intriguing to me. But yeah, it's, I guess, growing up with the whole Where's Waldo books and stuff like that sort of always inspired me to have an interest in things that may be not so easy to see and find the missing pieces.
That's exactly how I feel when I look at radiographs. Is like it is like a puzzle, right? And trying to figure out, you know, what's normal, what's abnormal, measuring things. So yeah, that's really cool. So thank you for being in this great profession and being a radiologist. So talk to me about Vital Rad. So what is it?
Yeah, so Vital Rads is a teleradiology company. We're based, like you said, in Cypress, Texas, just outside of Houston. And we employ specialists, not just in radiology, but we actually employ cardiologists that will look at echocardiograms and EKGs, which is kind of unique, and not a lot of people know that, that you can send your EKGs and have those interpreted. But we also employ neurologists, veterinary dentists, and neurologists. So our primary service is built around teleradiology. So we have team members here in the Cypress office, but we also have teleradiologists that can work remotely, and they're all over the country. And technically we can employ them worldwide. So it just gives us a network to reach out to the communities that are around and may not have services available to them and access to specialists. So that's the biggest thing that we try and do is be the specialist that you may not have access to. But yeah, we do it digitally. So if you have a computer, if you have an internet connection, typically all the digital software can allow for us to get your images sent through our online system. We have support staff to sort of help with that, and we can access them remotely from anywhere in the world.
So walk me through that. I'm a general practitioner. I'm doing a three-view chest radiograph of a dog, and what happens next?
Yeah, so that'll be uploaded to your workstation, assuming you have digital radiography, which is the standard now. And if you're still using plain films, then we can still work with you. It's not a huge challenge, but typically everything is digital, so we'll sort of stick with that. So yeah, it'll go to your workstation, and then through your software that's built into those digital X-ray tables, you can set it up to actually remotely send and communicate with our PAC system, which is a storage system. And from there, we bring it up onto our web viewer and allow us to see those images and provide a report for you. So there's kind of a two-step system. When you've obtained those images of the three-view thorax, you're going to have to generate a report request on our website, and So that's just going to include basic information on the pet, history, and important information about them before sending in those images. And sort of we put that together and report based on that pet's needs and what your clinical picture is.
That's awesome. I love that. You just mentioned earlier something that's really a hot topic right now in veterinary medicine, and it's access to care and, you know, access to radiologists or internists, all those wonderful specialties. And I love and appreciate having a relationship with these specialists, and specifically for what we're talking about, a radiologist. So what are, why is it, why do you think it's important? I think I know the answer, but why is it important for veterinarians to have a relationship with a radiologist?
Yeah, and like you said, like the specialists that, you know, working in general practice, it's always sort of feels like there's this veil between the general practitioner and a specialist. And I feel like working towards a relationship and building an intimate relationship with the general practitioner is really valuable. So I want to sort of break down those barriers and make sure that it feels like, you know, the radiologist is just somebody down the hall that you can call on, as well as the other specialists that we have. But I mean, I'm going to speak for radiologists, and really I want to have that relationship. So when you have questions and you have cases that need an extra look, you know, there shouldn't be this, you know, feeling like there's a challenge to doing that. Calling us up and having a conversation is always open and welcome and hopefully warm and beneficial for everybody. So for me, you know, that relationship is one thing that is really valuable. But it should be a collaboration, and you know, we want to make sure that you're looking at the images, you're getting your impressions, and you know, the general practitioners that I've spoken to are always just sort of very, very knowledgeable, and their experience is always just sort of a you know, an eye opener to me at how capable they are. And you know, they're picking out most of the things we see. And so then it just becomes, you know, the radiologist looks at things and can, you know, help guide a little bit and really sort of fine tune what they're looking at and pick up some of the more challenging things. Cause even now, I mean, there's always going to be challenges with cases. And so just having that extra set of eyes will go a long way. And I'm a big proponent of the sort of see something, say something. So if you're doing your 3-view chest rads and you're like, oh, you know, I see something in this lung lobe, you know, put that into the case report in your findings and bring that to our attention. Make sure that that's something that we will recognize, because sometimes those things may be incidental. We're going to sort of glaze past them. But when you mention it, then even if it is incidental, it will prompt a comment on that and allow a bit more dialogue and sensitivity to those things during our reporting, and just to sort of make sure there aren't additional questions moving forward, or if there needs to be a conversation, you know, those things are sort of avoided or at least more educated in the pursuit of them.
Right. Yeah. Excellent. And what are some of the things that generalists such as myself can do to help radiologists make the highest quality interpretation of images?
I would always say, you know, it starts with a clear and concise history. There's different times where we'll get, you know, a copy and paste of a medical record and an entire soap. And, you know, that's very thorough, but it ends up being a lot of reading to go through that, and it can open the door for opportunities to overlook or maybe neglect some of the more important features of the case. And like I said, you know, the value of the practitioner is super high. So, you know, if you're looking at this dog and you have a clinical suspicion and they're trying to go down one path of a diagnosis, you know, that's the important stuff that we want to sort of key on and make sure that we're giving extra attention to. So that clear, concise history and your clinical impressions are going to be really valuable. You know, and to sort of expand on that, you know, if you have that differential list already started, you know, we're going to be able to help guide that. And it may just be cutting out a couple of the differentials that may not be as relevant based on imaging findings, or we can see something that may sort of bring a new light to an additional differential diagnosis that may not be considered.
And what are some of the common things that could be confusing on images and may not be conclusive on a radiology report? I laugh because sometimes I'm like, is that something or is it not? And so what are some common incidental findings too, which might be misunderstood or misleading on radiographs?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, it never sort of, you don't get past seeing things that can be confusing or misleading in radiographs. And so a few of the things that I want to draw attention to are artifacts that we see, and also just sort of the common incidental things. So as far as artifacts go, some of these things are because of your hardware. So whether it's your imaging plate that may be damaged or dirty, that can create artifact in the imaging. So maybe some dead pixels on your imaging plate, for example, and that can create just a little black spot or a bright spot that could easily be, if it's superimposed with a region of interest, say like the distal femur, and you're doing a stifle image, you know, that could look like an aggressive lesion. And we want to make sure that those things are you know, viewed as an artifact and not misinterpreted as pathology. Other things that we see are going to be when anatomy is superimposed, you can get what's called a mock line. And so if you have, you know, two limbs superimposed over each other, you know, something like a trough that can superimpose with bone, that can create what looks like a fracture line. And it's just that superimposition where the imaging software is going to change the values of that image and make it look like there's a linear defect, which can really look like a fracture. And so just being able to recognize those things are really important. Some things are generated by poor collimation. So if you're imaging, like I said, a stifle joint and you include the abdomen, you know, the software is really advanced on these digital imaging stations. And what happens sometimes is that the software will read it out and try and take the biggest piece of anatomy they see and give you the best possible image. And that may black out the stifle joint if you have enough anatomy for the abdomen. So they'll see the abdomen, give you a perfect image of that, but the region of interest that you're looking for in the stifle joint could just be completely lost and look like it's super overexposed. And so getting good collimation, good technique is going to really limit those kind of things. Other things that we see will be like patient motion. So if they're panting, things like that, or just a puppy that's a little bit ornery, that could really change things for us and make it difficult to interpret with something like a metallic bone plate. So a TPLO plate or something like that, since we're still on the discussion of a stifle joint. There's an artifact called an Uberschwinger artifact, which will create sort of a lucent rim around that just because of the change in contrast. And so recognizing those things are also very helpful. So coming back to the incidental stuff that we see that can be confusing, things like cholesterol cyst or Bates body, that's a thin-walled mineral body, or fat necrosis, often seen in the abdomen of our cats. We get a lot of comments on those questioning what that could be, but it may not be commented on by the radiologist because it is something that we see all the time and doesn't mean anything clinically. There is something called plate-like atelectasis, which creates a linear increase in opacity between the lung lobes, where it's basically the geometry of the beam is hitting the edge of the pleural margin and making it look like there's thickening there, which is just how that pleural margin will look, and often misinterpreted as pleural effusion. Mm. A couple other things are things that we often see, like when you're looking for metastasis to the lungs and you get some nipples that might be superimposed there, or a cutaneous nodule. Those are often misleading and definitely things that we want to make sure are ruled out and not misdiagnosed, because that can lead to a poor outcome or sort of take you down a path that may not be as beneficial for our pet owners. Then a couple other things are meniscal ossicles or synovial osteochondromatosis. And that's the mineral bodies that we often see in cats in their stifle joints. But they can be in other joints as well. Not the meniscal part, but synovial osteochondromatosis can. And then pulmonary osteomas are also known as osseous metaplasia, or little mineral bodies that form in the lungs of older dogs. And again, that's another thing that can be very confusing as far as looking for metastasis and making sure that those are not things to be considered in our clinical picture.
Really great job. You know, pulmonary osteomas always got me. So another reason why I always feel like you have to take multiple views just in case, you know?
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm curious to get your opinion on artificial intelligence in radiology. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's actually, I think it's really exciting that, you know, that the advancements, I'm going to be a nerd for life. And so anything that sort of advances technology and allows for really new information and using technology in unique ways is really interesting to me. And I think there is a place in it, in veterinary medicine. And where I think right now that place is using it as a screening tool. Because I think, you know, there's so much variety in the anatomy and conformation of our breeds, if we're talking about dogs and even some of our cats. The artificial intelligence is good at picking up some things that may not be normal, but it will also pick up a lot of things that may be normal for that dog. So, you know, if I think about one of the most common things, it's going to be like our brachycephalic breeds, bulldogs, and looking at the chest on one of those dogs and how big the heart can look, how opaque the cranial mediastinal space can look, having congenital vertebrae anomalies, like hemivertebrae, those types of things are misleading to the artificial intelligence and will, you know, sort of prompt it to say there may be something here. And so I think it's a great screening tool for that and bringing it to the clinician's attention and then maybe prompting them to move forward and send it to a radiologist for additional views. And really, I think that's where the value is. It's not going to replace the personal touch that a radiologist has. And I think that's really important. And again, you're not going to be able to have those intimate conversations with the artificial intelligence. You know, they're going to say yes, no, you know, maybe something here, maybe not, and give you a list of non-specific differentials. But, you know, I think with the service of a radiologist is irreplaceable with that personal touch where we can look into things, have a conversation, and get into the real diagnosis of that pet and help to work through a case in light of a lot more of a clinical picture than what's just presented from an artificial intelligence standpoint.
Oh, nice. Very interesting. Fascinating stuff. It's a great time to be a veterinarian, I'll tell you that. And lastly, what is VitalRad's relationship with our friends at Thrive Pet Healthcare?
Yeah, so we are a partner with them in part of the network of Thrive Pet Healthcare. And, you know, it's been a really valuable relationship that we've built. The company VitalRads was built and started by Brian Poteet, and he was joined by Bobby Werner and sort of started it from the ground up. And after joining Thrive Pet Healthcare, you know, it's sort of really expanded our network and given us a lot more access to clinics out there, as well as resources that help to reach the veterinary community. And that those are just, you know, really great aspects of our relationship. But being able to reach those clients with the specialists that we have in radiology, cardiology, dentistry, and neurology, I think is a benefit for the general practitioner, pet owners, and also for us to, you know, be able to reach out to those clinics a little bit more. For the clients that are, you know, taking their pets to the network of hospitals, you know, I think it's really great to be able to leverage the expertise of our specialists, and it provides added comfort to the pet owner to know that, you know, a diagnosis is supported by a specialist without having to refer to a specialty hospital in a lot of cases. And, you know, we're going to see cases from a lot of general practitioners, but also specialty hospitals that are out there that may not have a real good radiology service, may not have a radiologist on staff, or maybe they're just on vacation. You know, having our specialists available allows that opportunity. But in general, I think the biggest benefit comes to pet owners that may not have access to those specialty hospitals, and also the clients and the general practitioners that want to be able to continue that pet care in-house and get the opinions of a specialist and continue to work up that case without, you know, having to say goodbye and send the dog down the road or off to a city that may be hundreds of miles away, and just continue to work it up and have access to those things, which really is in the best interest of everybody involved.
Yeah, absolutely. For the greater good of the animals. I love it. Well, where can we learn more about Vital Rads?
Yeah, so the Vital Rads website is a great place to start. So that's just vitalrads.com. It has information on, you know, our staff, what we do, services we provide, and then a number to call and ways to sign up to become, you know, one of the many wonderful clients that we have. Or if you just have questions, you know, we're available for that. And I don't want to, you know, sound like it's just a, just a business. No, we're here to do the best for the pets. So, you know, if there's questions on different things about what imaging technique we need to do, you know, if there's a contrast study and how much contrast to use, radiologists are available. We also have a group of residents that we train, and those guys are super excited to be a part of the experience with the client, with the general practitioner, with patient care, and make sure that, you know, we're doing the best we can in the imaging world to get the best we can for these pets and reach a diagnosis to do the best healthcare that we can.
You heard it right here. Radiologist Dr. Chris Peran, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to rate this week's podcast. Helps us out significantly. And we'll see you next week right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.